And tonight on Coast to Coast, you get David Wilcock for the full 3 hours. His latest work is called The Synchronicity Key, right down our alley. We'll be talking with David about that in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Noted author, professional lecturer, television host, filmmaker, researcher of ancient civilizations, David Wilcock. David and I run into each other a lot these days at various conferences and speaking engagements, and he's put together a number of books, of course, and The Source, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, but this one is called The Synchronicity Key, The Hidden Intelligence Guiding the Universe and You, something we've talked about for so many years. David, welcome. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, George.
Looking forward to this. This is a topic that really strikes home for me. I'll get into some of the reasons why later, but it's always good to see you, my friend. What's new?
Well, I had to put the guitar down to pick up the phone and talk to you.
So. I was at an event.
You win.
and somebody was saying, Nori, you and Wilcock always have to sing at these places. And but it's fun, isn't it?
Yeah. I've been really enjoying learning the guitar, and I'm working on more and more complicated stuff now. I'm doing this one guitar website where they rank the difficulty of the songs you can learn on 1 to 10 scale. And everything like 8 and above is red, like the red color,
yeah,
which signifies like you're gonna die trying to learn this song. And I've just about finished working on an 8, which is actually the intro to the Heart song "Crazy on You." It's really fast and intricate and technical, and I've just been really enjoying that. It's like a very different head for me than the head where I'm writing books and talking about all this cosmic stuff. And
it's a good outlook.
Yeah, it is. And I only picked up the guitar like 2.5 years ago. I did minor in jazz in college, but it was all percussion. So I can do a really amazing jazz drum solo, but I really missed the fact that I never had a melodic instrument.
Well, I know when you were doing Beyond Belief with me, you you came out dancing Gangnam Style.
That's right, I did.
I remember you brought the audience to its knees.
You had me dance that way in front of the Conscious Life Expo.
Well, you're good.
The Village Idiot. Thanks a lot, George.
You jump up and do it. So
that's true. I follow my orders, right? Like
and
they said in Nuremberg.
You do it well. Look, the Source Field Investigations, one of your books, it was a bestseller. I think you've got another one with the Synchronicity Key here. This is something, David, that really strikes home for everybody, all of us. Are in this mode. As you know, I say there are no coincidences. I think things are done by synchronicity and fate. Give me your overview of this work, Synchronicity Key.
It's an interesting phenomenon. I don't even really know where to start. You know, I have a friend who's a guy in the music industry that wrote some hit songs for Madonna, Michael Jackson and stuff.
Yeah.
And he's a really switched on guy. And he's telling me that these people that he knows in the music industry are starting to see numbers on clocks all the time.
Uh-huh.
And they don't know what the hell is going on.
Just like we have for years.
Yeah. And they're like, what is this? What is this 11-11? And actually, as I said that, it was just 11-11 Pacific time here, so I was reminded of that. But, you know, it started for me, I guess, really it didn't start until I quit doing all, marijuana and alcohol, which was in, September, 1992. I'm actually coming up on my 21 year sobriety anniversary.
Good for you. Were you doing too much of both?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely was maintenance high. I basically just stayed intoxicated and, there was a lot of pain that I was trying to run away from. And
yeah.
When you go through a process of, you know, 12 step groups, you basically, the steps are all about how do you face the thing that you're hiding from with the addiction. And, you know, once I got clean and I, you know, you go through about 3 months where you just feel horrible because you have no serotonin.
Oh, no, and the withdrawals and everything
else. Oh, yeah. But then after that, and even before that, really, I mean, I started to record my dreams every morning, which my mother had been doing ever since I was a little kid. She had all these dream notebooks. So she was the inspiration for that. And the dreams were becoming very fascinating. They were giving me all kinds of interesting insights. This is kind of unflattering, but I guess I'll share it with 20 million of my closest friends.
Yeah.
There was a girl who took a strong interest in me. She was 24 years old, and I found out over the course of time that she was married to a 54-year-old man. and she wanted to have an affair with me.
How old were you at the time?
Oh, gosh, 19.
Wow. So she's the cougar.
Yeah, and she goes, David, you have the most beautiful eyes I have ever seen on a man. I was like, wow, thank you. You know, that's really amazing. And we were...
And compliments go far with you.
They do. Yep. They do, especially back then because I had low self-esteem. I was coming off of a massive drug addiction. We had this gym class. I'm probably giving too much information now, but we had this gym class where I'm hacking up all these lung cookies, as I used to call them, you know, when you cough up resin out of your lungs. Because once I stopped smoking, all the stuff started to clear.
It just breaks down, exactly.
You know? And then she starts to want to, have this extramarital affair with me. And I kind of thought maybe we were going to do it, but it really was against my moral and ethical principles, and I didn't want this guy to come after me.
So you're fighting yourself at that time.
Yeah, and then I have this dream in which she's attacking me with a dagger.
Oh, boy.
And the only defense that I had was to take my shirt off and to try to trap the dagger as she's trying to stab at me with it.
So you got it wrapped around your arm or something?
Yeah, and then I'm also holding it sort of like a... like between both hands, and I'm trying to like wrap the arm, you know?
Yeah.
And she's just laughing the whole time and acting like it's not a big deal, but at the same time, she's being extremely savage. And then, interestingly enough, after this dream, and it was very eye-opening, I was like, wow, what the heck is this all about? Then we actually went to a Chinese restaurant together, and we go into the Chinese restaurant, and I worked for 2 years with people who have developmental disabilities, and I love them. I mean, I actually really enjoyed that work, even though I did change adult diapers and things like that, and I worked with people who had severe behavioral problems.
It's a lot of work and a great commitment on your part.
Yeah, and, you know, they gave us 2 cents over minimum wage. It was $5.77 an hour, and that was supposed to make you feel good that you're getting more than the minimum. But anyway, we went to this Chinese restaurant for our, I guess, a date, you could call it. And they brought in a busload of about 25 developmentally disabled people to have their group dinner. And so all these people were, like, staring at her and smoking cigarettes and drinking soda. And the whole thing just got really, really bizarre. And I just kept feeling like something's not right about this. You know, this is a sign. This is not a random event that these people all came into the restaurant when I already had this crazy dream.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went back to my room, and she starts trying to make out with me, and I just told her, look, I'm just not comfortable. I'm really sorry. This just doesn't feel right. And then I had dreams telling me, no, you made the right decision.
How'd you get rid of her?
Well, I mean, basically, if you got a woman in your room who's that hot and she wants to make out with you and you just say, sorry, I'm not really interested, you know, she's not going to come back.
She just walked away, huh? Well, you're lucky you didn't end up like the Redford did in the movie The Natural.
I haven't seen that one.
Well, you got to get that. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about. She turned on him.
Ah, well, no, I was lucky. I was lucky. That's true, because that could happen. She could have become like the woman in the dream.
Yep.
Her character in the dream.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was one of the very early temptations when I was getting sober and my sobriety was still sort of in jeopardy. You know, I could have relapsed, but I stayed clean. And I avoided these sexual temptations that were coming my way. And I basically was able to kind of get my life straightened out. And what started to happen after this was I got the following February, because this was in September, October, where this whole sequence of events was happening with this woman. And I was getting sober. Then in February, that's when a friend of mine told me that UFOs were real. And he heard it from his physics professor, who happened to be the head of the department at a major New York State university, and also worked for NASA throughout the 1970s, and said to my friend in a private two-hour teacher-student conference they had that UFOs are real. The government has been hiding the truth ever since at least the Roswell crash.
And this is coming from a scientist.
This is coming from the head of the physics department.
Wow.
Who actually told his whole class, leaving everybody slack-jawed, and then my guy happened to be the eighth student in the class and took a teacher-student conference right after it was over and said, basically, okay, what the hell are you talking about? And he got into all this technical detail, and I've gone through it many times. By this point, I'd just come out of the 90 and 90 they tell you to do, 90 meetings in 90 days where you don't use and you basically go to a AA or NA meeting every day. I didn't do narcotics, but the only two choices you had were Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous. And NA started to freak me out after a while because all these guys are in there like saying, hey, man, you ever get that feeling when you're in the doctor's office and you just want to open up a drawer and look for works? And I'm like, yeah. No.
Get me out of here, right?
Yeah. And then in AA, I was like, well, you know, I never really had a drinking problem. I just like to get high and smoke grass.
So. What did you drink when you did drink?
Usually like screwdrivers. I do like vodka and orange juice.
Okay.
And I one time ended up so drunk that my friend kicked me in the head and I had a little blood and, you know, I mean, like,
and you didn't even know
stuff would happen. I had vomiting, you know.
Would you drive too?
Oh God, no. No. No, that's not
a smart thing you did.
Yeah. No, I've always been like almost polite to a fault. Like, I will be the guy who not only gives you the shirt off of his back, but I'll go to the store and buy you another shirt. And you can wear that one on top of the dirty one.
Well, do you find it difficult to keep this restraint?
You mean staying clean?
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, I did this event called Lightning in a Bottle. It's like Burning Man, except Burning Man's about 40,000. This was about 17,000 people. There was a lot of grass being smoked there, and it was the best quality stuff that people can buy.
How could you know?
It was very aromatic. Uh-huh. And there is a sort of a feeling that I get, but it's like I understand now that my happiness relies on chemicals in my brain that have to be secreted in order for the happiness response to exist. And if I use those drugs, all the drugs are doing is it's like telling my body, okay, I want to use what my supply of happiness is for the week. I want to use it all tonight.
Plus, you do know if you go over the line, it could destroy you.
Oh, yeah. You blow out all your happiness in one shot, and then the whole rest of the week you're depressed. And ultimately what happened to me was I couldn't feel good unless I smoked. And you're right. When I went to the meetings, the thing that shocked me was, you know, the first night I went, it was a synchronicity in of itself, because the night that I went the first time, two anniversaries were going on. There was a 5-year and a 13-year. And I'm listening to the stories that these guys are saying and how low they had to sink, because they say, you know, you want to raise the bottom so your bottom doesn't have to mean that you, like, ruin your whole life and ruin the people you love. And, I mean, the 13-year guy, he, like, went off on a drinking bender and left his wife and kids at home for, like, 7 days or something. And he ended up on the side of the road and puke and piss and, I mean, just horrible. And I was listening to these stories going, my God, here I'm worried that, like, I'm going to fail a class in college. Well, I have all my needs paid for by a meal plan, and I'm living on campus. And these guys are talking about, like, frickin' brink of death type stuff. So it was a big eye-opener for me, and I'm like, wow. If this is as low as I ever need to go, that I walked into a psychology class and I'm like going, why does everybody have a blue piece of paper on their desk and why is it so quiet? And then I realize it's a midterm and I hadn't studied and that's my bottom. Yeah, that's good enough for me. I don't need it to go any lower than that.
So let's bring this into two things. One, when you wrote the Source Field Investigations, you did mention a little bit about synchronicity. I remember that was in there.
Yeah.
And so there's an obvious tie-in between that and today. What is your definition of synchronicity?
Well, synchronicity was coined by Dr. Carl Jung, who was a contemporary of Sigmund Freud, who I was reading about back in college, and probably was on that very blue paper that I just described. And he defined synchronicity as the similarity between one or more events that shouldn't have any relationship to each other otherwise, but there's some mysterious connection between seemingly disconnected events. So like on the surface, I brought this hot girl to the Chinese restaurant, right? On the surface, there's no connection between this busload of 25 developmentally disabled people showing up at the same time that we did. But on another level, I saw it as a very poignant message that, you know, I was acting like these people, and I was being less than fully present, you know, in the same way that the dream was telling me the same thing. So synchronicity for me, a lot of people keep saying, I get this question all the time, David, what about the numbers? Why do I keep seeing these numbers all the time? And I say, look, the numbers are a symbol from some greater part of you. You could call it your soul, or I like to call it the higher self. And they are awakening you to the fact that we live in a hologram. It's not real in the way that most people think. This Cartesian matter paradigm that we've been living in is only a convenient arrangement. It's like a marriage to some bondage where the marriage doesn't have any of the benefits that marriage should have, and all you're doing is getting nagged by matter all the time. You're not having anything fun. It's just a miserable existence. That's the existence that most people are living in, where they think that they're born and they die, and when you die, that's it. You're done.
A lot of people think that.
I know. And I even when I was in the throes of my addiction, I never felt that way. I did have...
I've had my doubts.
Well, I know, and we've gone through this before, but I noticed in the beginning of the show that you had an audio clip of yourself talking to a caller in which you articulated very clearly the same thing that I feel. And I think you and I have started to see more and more of the same way as time goes on here.
Maybe we've evolved. Maybe we're just getting old, David, huh?
It could be. I got over the hill on March 8th of this year. I'm 40 now. So.
Oh, old man, you.
What can I say?
I'll buy 10 years from you. You and I will negotiate a price.
I'm still fighting, and so are you. So.
Well, that's the name of the game. You have to. So synchronicity, what causes it? I mean, it's there. We know it's there. How does it work?
Well, the only rational conclusion that you can make as these events intrude on your reality, sooner or later, you have to start seeing, okay, there's some part of me that's intelligent, that's got this whole thing figured out a lot more than I do, and it's out there going around and setting up things to happen and making somebody drop the banana peel that I end up slipping on or whatever, you know. There's weird subconscious coordination between people and, in some cases, with inanimate objects, including, like, you know, I mean, somebody wrote in the other day and said, I'm realizing that something as seemingly insignificant as biting down wrong on a seed and getting the seed stuck between my teeth, and that painful event happens right as I'm having this thought that I realize is a very bad idea for me to be going into. That seed was not an accident. My body was manipulated by some other part of me to make me bite down the wrong way.
See, but I wonder, David, if we generate the events, or if this force that's out there that creates the synchronicity generates it.
That's a good question, and I believe the answer is that there is a greater force involved, and I believe that on one level, the force is ourselves and our own soul. On another level, there's a collaboration with other people's souls, and we're all talking to each other on some other plane of existence. Then I think there's also higher beings that are not incarnate on Earth that are helping coordinate it. And those beings, in turn, are coordinating the intelligent directives of living planets, stars, and, in fact, the galaxy itself. Because in my model, it's a living universe.
A living universe.
It's a living, thinking universe.
Is it
made of stuff that thinks.
Is it a God-driven universe?
A lot of people call it God. You know, that's a sort of a gender-specific term that has a lot of emotional charge for some people, but we can go with the word God. I mean, it's totally appropriate.
You've been doing this for a long, long time. Are you getting answers?
Absolutely. I have a dream practice, and I'm celebrating 21 years of sobriety and getting my dreams every morning, as I said, on September 22nd. And I can't tell you how many times I've had incredibly accurate dreams of future events before they happen. It's happened so many times that anybody who is a skeptic, you just have to have compassion for them because they haven't had the experience. But what synchronicity does is it freaking kicks the door down.
Hold on, David. We're going to hit the break and come right back for more on Coast to Coast AM. Same great television show, brand new website name. It's www.beyondbelief.com. Simple as that. Remember that. Take advantage of it. You get 10 days free. This Friday night, our special guest will be Dr. Robin Falkov talking about alternative medicine and what they're trying to do to you. BeyondBelief.com. And welcome back. David Wilcock with us. We're talking about his latest work, The Synchronicity Key. Synchronicity. We're going to get into your calls in the last hour, and I'm sure most of you have had some events that you would call synchronicity. David, as we're talking about this so-called God function in the universe, are you saying that synchronicity is determined, or do we create it?
Well, I don't know if I can answer that.
You can answer anything.
I'd say it's both, really. You know, it could be either one. There are some things that are determined, and there are some things that we do appear to create. There is one level in which synchronicity is very interactive, and if I have a thought that's a progressive thought, I may get a ringing in my right ear, and that's a synchronicity that tells me that I'm on the right track. Or I may get this sudden rushing sensation in my heart. Those would be like somatic synchronicities or body synchronicities. Similarly, if I'm having a negative thought, I might get like a stabbing pain or a feeling like there's a little needle pricking me somewhere. And these things have been happening for a long time. So synchronicity dynamically interacts with your thoughts as you're having them, but that only covers one half of my book, and the second half, which is more academic, and we need that for the skeptics out there who are going to do whatever they can do to rip this apart.
Yeah, it's like you had two different hats on.
Yeah, the second half basically is showing that there's dozens and dozens of cases throughout all recorded history, all the way back to the Sumerians, and it's every chronological record of history that we have, showing that it's the same story, the same sequence of events that Joseph Campbell called archetypes, and they keep on happening. And the thing that's so amazing is how precisely they keep repeating. If I may, let me give you one example and how it relates to something that's very personal for everybody, which would be 9/11. 9/11, as it turns out, fit the logic of these cycles that I had learned about in 1999. I had been given a manuscript written by this French scholar, François Masson, and he was working off of this other guy, Michel Helmer, who discovered that history is repeating itself in cycles of time that are all harmonics, meaning they're all divisible into this grand number that all the ancient mystery schools and religious teachings were obsessed with, which is this unit of 25,920 years that apparently is nothing more than a wobble in the Earth's axis. But now it appears, according to Walter Cruttenden and others who support him, that it's actually our solar system is orbiting another star, and we're actually in a binary solar system.
A lot of people believe that.
The Sumerians called it Nibiru, and I'm sure you've had dozens and dozens of people talking about Nibiru on this show. I didn't want to buy into the Nibiru thing for a long time, and that actually caused me to resist this idea of a binary solar system for many years. But Cruttenden just hammered it down with academic scholarship. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, we figured out that the Earth isn't flat, we figured out that the Earth is not the center of the solar system, but we still haven't figured out that we got another gravitating body right near us that's affecting the gravitational pull of the Earth, and it's making this cycle occur. But once you understand the geometry that stars create and that we're moving through a geometric energy field, and that geometry actually, it's almost like a CD. And as you rotate the CD, it plays a song, except in this case, we're being played by the song. And the thoughts that we have and the decisions that we make are very precisely guided. But nothing could have prepared me for the scholarship that would be required to try to advance Masson's work. Now, I inherited this manuscript from a good friend of mine, and it had some really impressive stuff. This Frenchman, Michel Helmer, in like 1961, predicted that in the year 1968, that there would be a massive revolution in France, And he was able to get it down within just a few days of when it happened. And the reason why he knew it was going to happen was that he had identified that French history was repeating itself precisely in a cycle that he had found that shows up all over the place, that's exactly one quarter of an age of the zodiac. Now, the age of the zodiac is one of the core mysteries. He showed that Roman history and American history keep doing the same things over an age of the zodiac. So, you know, I heard about, obviously, that we're in the age of Pisces. We've just moved into the age of Aquarius. But everybody kind of laughs at that, and they say, oh, these cycles, they don't mean anything. You
know, a lot of people say that.
Age of the zodiac, that's nothing. Well, it turns out that the knowledge to understand that time is a fractal and that time is cyclical rather than linear was encoded in over 30 ancient cultures around the world. They were given this knowledge apparently by gods, as they called them, these human extraterrestrials who visited them. And these gods could have told them anything they wanted, but this is the one thing they kept saying is the most important thing you need to know. Learn about the cycles. Because what we find out is that history is like the movie Groundhog Day, and it's the same darn story over and over again. And the story includes some pretty nasty stuff. It includes violence, war, atrocities, and it is repeating, and it repeats so precisely that, as I said, in 1961, Michel Helmer, this scholar, an astrologer, was able to predict that the whole thing that Joan of Arc pulled off in the 1400s was going to repeat as a student-led revolution in France, and it actually did repeat down to within about 4 days or less of when the key battle happened that Joan of Arc ultimately was martyred for participating in. But remember,
would you call that synchronicity, though, or in, you know, a prophecy?
Well, it's synchronicity to me, because what happened is that after I learned about this, I immediately got all curious about 9/11. And I said, okay, if this guy is right, if history can repeat itself so precisely that you're only a few days off over this 539-year gap, that Jesus refers to it in the Bible by saying you must forgive your brother 7 times 77 times. Well, 7 times 77 is 539, which is the cycle that he says this is all happening with. It's almost exactly 540, 1 year off. And 540 is exactly one quarter of an age of the zodiac at 2001 or 60 years.
Interesting.
So your listeners can go back and, you know, listen to that part if I'm talking too fast. I do apologize. But the point is that there was a basic cycle that the book gave. I looked at 9/11 and I said, if this guy is right, let's take 9/11 and rewind it 539 years in the past. See what happens. Sure enough, 539 years before September 11th, 2001, we get September 11th, 1462, I believe, and September 17th, 1462, so it's only 6 days off. The biggest war that had happened in Europe for quite some time took place. It was called the Battle of Swiecino. Now, that in and of itself doesn't really mean anything. It could be looked at as just
a coincidence,
alchemy, right? Like, oh, he's got the tinfoil hat on real tight. But the thing is, when I investigated it more, I found, much to my amazement, that much of modern history regarding the exact time that George H.W. Bush lost the election to Clinton happened within days of when this thing called the 13 Years War started. Clinton actually appears to be a reiteration of a political figure that was leading an alliance back then. His name was Johannes von Basen. And one of the weirdest things about this science is that the same people come back, and they look just like the people they were before, and they do the same stuff.
You mean reincarnated type people?
Yes. And probably the weirdest one on that front, which we can jump around a little bit, is there's a fractal between Roman history and American history across 2,160 years, or one age of the zodiac, and it's astonishing. It's like every single thing that happens in Roman history becomes American history. So Rome has the First Punic War, we have World War I. Rome has the Second Punic War, we have World War II. Rome's biggest enemy in both of the Punic Wars was Carthage, and Carthage's cycle companion is Germany. Germany was America's biggest nemesis in World War I and II.
And, of course, Rome collapses. Look what's happening to us now.
Well, but get a load of this. Hannibal was the Carthaginian general, the general of the army for Carthage, that went against Rome in the Second Punic War. Hannibal is the spitting image of Hitler. They look almost identical, except Hitler is like Hannibal shaving his beard and only leaving a little bit under his nose. They look, it's the same guy. And they spent 6 years at war. They both marched through the Alps. Hannibal used elephants. Hitler used tanks. They had the same war strategy. They looked the same. They talked the same.
What are you saying, David? That history does repeat itself?
I'm saying that reality is not real. We're in a hologram. There is a story that is repeating, and it will keep repeating until we master the lesson it's teaching us. And synchronicity is intruding into our lives on a personal level to nudge us to what the lesson is, but it can't come right out and tell you, because that violates a universal law, which is called the law of free will.
Now, these events of synchronicity, do they happen every 539 years, or every event but 539 years from that event? So we might have 20 events over the next 10 years, but you can go back 539 years from each one.
Very good question. There's basically, there's a few cycles that we have to look at, but the two strongest ones appear to be the 2160 year age of the Zodiac, and then the 539 year age of the Zodiac quarter cycle. And again, you shave off 1 year because then it becomes more harmonic. You can divide 7 into it and 11 and all these other numbers.
Right.
But the fact is it works. And the interesting answer to your question in terms of what's going on is that there are overlaps. It's not like only one cycle is at work. You might have a 539-year cycle, and you might have a 2160-year cycle that collide. And they don't always collide symmetrically. Another cycle is if you take the age of the Zodiac and you divide it up like a triangle into three equal pieces, you get a 720-year cycle. And the history of Christianity very neatly divides into this. If you take 720 years after the birth of Christ, you have an event called the iconoclasm, which is when suddenly the people demanded that images of Jesus be taken off of their money and off of the archways over the entrance to a town and off of posters on the wall.
Why?
Because they didn't like the fact that the government was using Christianity to create a government-sanctioned religion and a military crackdown in the name of God. And the iconoclasm was when the government severely tightened its grip and used religion to cause this to happen. Then you go 720 years again forward in the future, very precisely, and within 1 year, you have the beginning of the Renaissance and the Reformation that collapsed the church and state union and separated church and state, and it collapsed the stricture over the Bible, where you couldn't read the Bible. You could only have it read to you in a liturgy at church. And it also led to the development of science, which up until that point had been literally kept under martial law by the government, which was the church. The church would not allow you to develop scientifically, and that all broke down on this 720-year cycle. And interestingly enough, just on that point quickly, there is a totally independent Russian researcher named Anatoly Fomenko who's working off of another Russian researcher named Morozov. Morozov came out with this same discovery about cycles of history back in the early 20th century, but he thought that it meant that history was faked by the chronologies and that the people writing up the histories were just basically running out of ideas, and they kept using the same script over and over again because they wanted to fill up pages or something. I mean, I never really felt like that theory made sense, but this guy Fomenko, he's a hardcore scholar, and as I reveal in the book, Synchronicity Key, Garry Kasparov, who was one of the
Great chess player.
Yeah, the number one chess guy, right? Garry Kasparov is totally into these cycles of history. He says there is something here that is very profound and requires our attention because all of written history is doing this. And what I show is that the biggest cycles that Fomenko found, there's a series of four of them, and it's in a big graph towards the end of the web of the book, and all four of these cycles are almost or exactly 720 years apart from each other. So the 720-year cycle that these French guys talked about, which is exactly one-third the age of the zodiac, was independently discovered by a totally separate guy who had no idea that it was connected to ancient mystery teachings or cycles of history that were predicted by the gods or any of that stuff. He thinks that it's all people that were messing around with the history books because they were bored and they wanted to fill up pages or something.
Well, let's assume that's all correct, David. And we have these kinds of cycles with events occurring, similar events. Again, though, is it us? Are we the ones developing this? Or is there some other force doing this to us?
Well, okay, it's an interesting question.
Or is that I don't know answer?
Well, the question in and of itself is based in Cartesian logic, which says that there is an I and a them. And the new science says there's only identity. The whole universe is awareness.
It's all one.
That's all you get is one consciousness. And it's bifurcated itself so many times that we have this illusion of a personality and a separate identity. And that's what we're meant to have to grow from. You know, like the Arthurian Grail legend, King Arthur, when he finds the Holy Grail and he's able to pull the sword out of the stone, that represents that he's the master of both worlds. And what he finds out is that as the king, he is the master of the forest. The health of his psyche is the health of the land, and he is an embodiment of the land and vice versa. And that's what an effective leader has to realize. And apparently Jesus, you know, came to the same thing. Great master teachers, they break down that wall of identity. And most of us, unfortunately, are, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it in cosmic terms, we are not yet at that point where we realize that we are, in fact, just one point of a greater awareness. And so we're therefore living in amnesia.
But the way I take it from you, if I'm reading you right, is that we're the ones creating this.
Yeah, you just got to be really expansive in how you define we.
That's right. Everything, I guess.
Because ultimately what we show in the book is that the path of Jesus was, Jesus is an embodiment of the galactic mind. When the Bible says God the Father and God the Son, that actually means the universe as an intelligent creator and the galaxy as an intelligent creator. The galaxy has a mind, it has a personality. There's science that proves that, where, you know, when you're in alignment with the center of the galaxy on Earth, your psychic ability goes up by 430%. That happens once a day at 13 hours and 30 minutes local sidereal time. So galactic alignment directly affects your consciousness because the galaxy is you. And so Jesus apparently figured that out. And he said this very interesting statement. He goes, somebody asks him, and I think it's in Matthew, they say, how many times should I forgive my brother if I've sinned against him? And Jesus says, forgive him 77 times. Now, why in the heck would he say that? Well, it also says that he only speaks in parables. He never comes out with anything direct. It's always encrypted. And if you break the encryption, he's talking about this 539-year cycle, I believe. And what's so fascinating is that the end of the cycle is here, and the nemesis, the planetary global nemesis, the Illuminati, whatever you want to call them, will be defeated as we go through this.
Hold on, David. We're coming back. Can't believe we've already gone through an hour already. More coming on Coast to Coast AM.